This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. There's a new poetry scene flourishing in rock clubs, performance spaces, and even on MTV. My guest Maggie Estep is one of the emerging stars. Sometimes she performs alone, sometimes with her rock band I Love Everybody. She recently was on the MTV Spoken Word Tour, and this summer she'll be part of the big alternative rock and hip-hop event, the Lollapalooza Tour. Estep lives in New York, where she's often performed at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe. She has a new CD called No More Mr. Nice Girl. Here's the opening track. Maggie Estep, welcome to Fresh Air.
Oh, thanks.
So, do the men yo-yo all the time in your neighborhood?
Well, it's a pretty frequent thing, yeah, unfortunately, yeah. Even where I, you know, when I wear, you know, a tent or something out, you know, it's still, it's like, hey, nice tent, babe.
So are you the kind of person who usually talks back on the street, or do you just save it for your music?
Well, I kind of save it because it's often dangerous to talk back. You know, you might get shot or something. But when I'm on my bike and I've, you know, and I'm going fast, I will talk back. You know, I'll say something, you know, ludicrous. Something that, you know, something sort of off the wall that really, you know, makes them, you know, pause and think, wow, what does that mean?
Like, what have you said?
Oh, you know, I just proposition them back, you know, with something completely absurd, like, I don't know, any number of things involving gardening or bathrooms or, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Now, Maggie, you used to sing with your band. How did you start doing spoken word?
Well, I've done spoken word, you know, for a while since I was, you know, I don't know, like 22 or something. And then I did that. And then the band was a separate entity. And then the spoken word thing, I started getting so much work doing that, that I left my band. But then I got a record deal and we needed music. So my band and I wrote stuff to go with the spoken word stuff and sort of created a new hybrid of rock and roll and poetry or spoken word or something.
So you were writing poetry all along?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, since I was, you know, 10 or something.
What are the poetry slams that you've been a part of?
Poetry slams are vicious competition. No, it's what, you know, you'll have four or five poets, and each poet gets up there and reads a poem and is judged. You know, they pick judges out of the audience at random, and they judge from 1 to 10. They score you from 1 to 10. And each round, you know, a poet is eliminated who gets a low score, and then it's down, you know, neck to neck with two poets, and then finally somebody wins. And it's you know, it's a kind of a... it gives poetry a new dimension and brings in a new kind of audience who are out to see blood, you know?
Did it mean a lot to you the first time you won a slam?
I was pretty shocked, you know, and then I kept winning them and I couldn't figure it out for the life of me. But, you know, I guess part of the reason I don't take it so seriously is that I always win, you know. If I always lost, I might feel differently.
You have a very assertive voice.
Uh-huh.
And I find that really interesting because I think we're in a period when a lot of women, particularly younger women, almost can't find their voice. That a lot of women have that rising inflection and a very tentative-sounding voice that seems trapped in the throat and seems to be a sign of insecurity.
Yeah, I do kind of notice that. I mean, there is this weird cultural trend in timid women and you know, and exemplified on like magazine covers where everyone, you know, like these big these models who are making all this money look completely helpless and childlike. And I find it incredibly annoying. I don't know. I mean, I'm, you know, in your face.
Did you always have that kind of assertive voice?
I think so. I mean, I'm actually really shy and certainly have my own particular insecurities. But yeah, I mean, I always have been like, I was never victim girl. You know, it's always like, I'm going to, you know, do what I want. Thank you very much. Get out of my way. You know,
can I ask you to do one of your poems for us now? Something without music?
Sure. Oh, I'll do a new one. It's called I'm an Emotional Idiot, So Get Away From Me. I'm an emotional idiot, so get away from me. I mean, come here. Wait, no, that's too close. Give me some space. It's a big country. There's plenty of room. Don't sit so close to me. Hey, where are you? I haven't seen you in days. What are you, having an affair? Who is she? Come on, aren't I enough for you? God, you're so cold. I never know what you're thinking. You're not very affectionate. I mean, you're clinging to me. Don't touch me. What am I, your cat? Don't rub me like that. Don't you have anything better to do than sit there fawning over me? Don't you have any interests, hobbies, sailing, fly fishing, archaeology? There's an archaeology expedition leaving tomorrow. Why don't you go? I'll loan you the money. My money is your money. My life is yours. My soul is yours. Without you, I'm nothing. Move in with me. We'll get a studio apartment together, save on rent. Well, wait, I mean, maybe a one bedroom so we don't get in each other's hair or anything. Or, well, maybe a two bedroom. I'll have my own bedroom. It's nothing personal. I just need to be alone sometimes. You do understand, don't you? Hey, where are you going? What? Was it something I said? I'm an emotional idiot, so get away from me. I mean, marry me.
a little approach avoidance there. So is this an autobiographical set of mixed messages?
Yes, definitely.
My guest is Maggie Estep. Her new CD is called No More Mr. Nice Girl. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. Maggie Estep is my guest. I'm interested in your background. I know you moved around a lot when you were young. What did your father do for a living?
He was a horse trainer, an eccentric horse trainer who, like, would always end up working for really wealthy people, you know, managing their horse stables, and then would get irritated and quit his job, and we would move. And so we moved a lot. You know, we moved about every 4 months or so. And it was kind of fun. You know, it was kind of a gypsy existence.
Did you do anything to compensate for the fact that you were always the new kid in school, the new kid on the block?
I just cultivated being, you know, I mean, it was always, it was like, oh, who's that new weirdo? So I just sort of cultivated that. I just kind of went with that. It was like, okay, I'm a weirdo, so I'm going to go with that. And you know, and I just would be as deliberately eccentric as possible after a while.
What would you do to be deliberately eccentric?
Well, you know, I got into the whole punk thing, so I had all my hair shaved off and tons of earrings, and this was like long before, you know, there were a lot of people like that walking around. So, you know, I had that going on, and I don't know, I just would always dress strangely, and you know, yeah.
Now, in spite of the fact that you've always read a lot and you've been writing since you were 10, you dropped out of high school, right?
I did, because, part of that was, I mean, I'd gone to like 7 high schools.
Oh, gosh.
And I got to this one final high school that was academically the second best public high school in the United States, and I had just come from like probably one of the worst. And so I was totally lost, and then somebody offered me a job in Manhattan, and I was like, okay, I'll go do that instead. And I moved to Manhattan.
What was the job?
Working at a record company, and I was 17. And there I was, little punk. I ended up getting fired because of my hairdo.
At a record company, they fired you?
Yes, yes.
Boy, it must have been pretty raucous hairdo if they fired
it was.
You for that.
It was pretty nasty, actually.
What was it?
You know, these little dreadlocks, and they were really dirty, and they were, like, dyed a very strange color. And, you know, Barry Manilow came in one day, and there I was in the reception area, and I guess he complained, and, you know.
Huh. So were you performing punk music?
No, I was too, I was in a couple bands, but we never got gigs so at that point. So no, I never did. I never did.
Now, you were a junkie for a while as a teenager?
Yeah, I was, you know, completely out of control for a while, and then, yeah.
How did you start on it?
I don't know. It was just, you know, it was around my neighborhood, and it just, you know, and people I was meeting and stuff, and I just sort of said, I'll try. You know, whenever I do something, I go all the way with it. I'm very black and white person. You know, I never do things in half measures. And so I was like, okay, this is what I'll do now. And, you know, quickly, you know, went through a lot of friends and a lot of jobs and a lot of apartments and ended up like, you know, homeless and like staggering down the street and stuff. And then, you know, went out to Colorado and got my head together and have remained with my head together.
How long were you homeless?
Not that long. I mean, well, you know, I don't know. It was a couple months, but I wasn't completely homeless. You know, people would put me up now and then, and then there were like, you know, 4 nights in a row where I was just staying on a roof somewhere.
So how did you get out of this?
Let's see, how did I get? Well, there was a detox, a rehab, a halfway house and all that stuff. So yeah, I mean, that was basically it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left New York for a while. And that's when I, you know, decided, oh, now I'm going to go to school. I'm not going to be a drug addict anymore. And I went to college and all that.
Huh. So when you went back to school, did you study writing?
I did, yes. I went to Naropa out in Boulder, and I studied writing and literature.
When you were on the streets, did you think, well, one day I'm going to be a writer?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was, you know, I was walking around with pen and paper always and continually trying to write these various novels. And, you know, I was trying. And then, you know, when I went out to Colorado and I cleaned up and stuff, then I start, you know, it just started pouring out of me.
So how did you go from this life of addiction and destitution to then going back to school for a while and emerging as a writer and performer?
I'm lucky. I don't know. You know, I mean, I just, I mean, it's that same, that thing I have in me where I never do anything halfway. You know, it was like, just as I had been, you know, completely applied myself to being a destitute junkie, I did the same thing with, then, it, you know, when that was over, it was like, okay, now I'm going to write. And I just, you know, threw myself into it completely and never, you know, and like, there were times where I didn't have any money and stuff and a hard time paying the rent, but I refused to like embark on some career that wasn't what I wanted to do. And I worked, you know, all these crappy jobs and, you know, got by living on very little, but was determined not to me, selling out is like not doing what you love. And cause people sometimes say, oh, being on MTV, isn't that selling out? It's like, no, selling out would be working in a corporation for me, you know? So, I was just very determined, you know, and I worked hard.
I guess it's been good for you that MTV has become really interested in spoken word.
Yeah, it has. It has. I mean, you know, it's really as a result of that that I'm now paying, you know, earning my living doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'd been doing what I'm doing for, you know, a number of years and just, you know, making a little money and doing all right. But then, you know, I was on MTV and it just really changed everything. You know, suddenly I had, you know, a manager, an agent, a lawyer, a record deal, you know, movie auditions, you know, all this stuff.
Well, I want to play one more track from your record, and I thought we'd go out with The Stupid Jerk I'm Obsessed With.
Oh, okay.
You want to say anything about writing this?
you know, it was just... Oh, you know what happened, actually? It was this bad character actor was this guy I was obsessed with. And he came to one of my readings one time, and he said something horrible to me after the reading. I was like, so what did you think? And he said, well, I liked that one poem, but everything else was completely self-indulgent. And I was, you know, I was like appalled. And I just said, oh, fine, you know, and I stormed home. And I turned on my little computer and I was like, I'll show you self-indulgent. And I was like, that stupid jerk I'm obsessed with, you know, and I just, it spouted out of me.
Okay, Maggie Estep, thank you so much.
You're welcome, thank you.
And Maggie Estep's new CD is called No More Mr. Nice Girl.
can feel his breath on my neck and smell the way he would smell if we slept together, because he is the stupid jerk I'm obsessed with, and that is his primary function in life, to be a stupid jerk I can obsess over, and to talk to that dingy bimbette blonde as if he really wanted to hear about her manicures and pedicures and new age ritualistic enema cures, and truth be known, he probably does want to hear about it because he is the stupid jerk I'm obsessed with, and he's
Maggie Estep from her new CD, No More Mr. Nice Girl. This is Fresh Air.